This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Welcome in. It's Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Here's how we're going to start today, Abdallah. We are focusing on the Chicago Bulls. Their search continuing for a new GM. Adrian Wojnarowski on Friday reporting that the Chicago Bulls will be talking to candidates soon, and the pool is expected to include several assistant GMs. Calvin Booth in Denver, Mark Eversley in Philadelphia, Mark Hughes with the Clippers, and Matt Lloyd with the Magic. So when we take a look at the Chicago Bulls situation right now, basically, we have a fresh new beginning, right? So when we look at this team and we look at what we have going forward, to me, that means there's endless possibilities of the way that this team could be shaped for the future. No longer is the status quo okay. Maybe something could be in the works where now, finally, the Bulls could be in search of a star.
Well, you got to look at what the Bulls have moving forward. You know, if you look at their salary cap situation for next season, they're kind of tied to all these guys unless they make a big trade. I mean, you've got 22% of your cap, $28.5 million tied into Otto Porter next season, $19.5 million tied into Zach LaVine. So a lot of these guys are locked up. So the only way you're going to make an instant change in this organization is to trade away pieces and either bring in someone that's going to make an instant impact like a star, or strip this down to nothing and start over again. And that's what is it, Arturis Karnisovas is going to be taxed with as the new vice president of basketball operations. What does he like about this team? Which pieces does he think that can be a part of this team moving forward? Who does he move? And if he likes a lot of these pieces, can you bring in another piece, maybe a disgruntled star, to be an instant impact for this team?
So we go to yesterday. The New York Daily News had this column out on the New York Daily News yesterday about the New York Knicks. And this is why it's going to relate to the Chicago Bulls. The New York Knicks, and the way that people in New York are thinking, is this. Because the Knicks have a new group running the front office as well. That's where you see Leon Rose is now the Knicks basketball operations president, right? President of basketball operations, Leon Rose. He was just named from the New York Knicks. Here's how the column on the Daily News starts. If Donovan Mitchell ever hits the trade market, the Knicks should throw the kitchen sink immediately. That includes any young players, draft assets that the Jazz ask for. There is no need for first-round picks when you can land a player of Mitchell's caliber. So the story goes on to quote that because of Rudy Gobert and the relationship between Gobert and Mitchell and what took place when Gobert tested positive for having the coronavirus and the domino that fell to kind of kickstart all of the sports kind of stopping, screeching to a halt. I think that was back on March 10th. It was like a Wednesday night when this all kind of started. The column on the New York Daily News is quoting a piece in The Athletic talking about the relationship between Mitchell and Gobert and how it may not be able to be repaired. Okay, so if you have a star who is disgruntled, in the past, the way this would kind of work here in Chicago is we would say, hey, Gar Pax, there's a star over there. He's really good. Maybe the Bulls should take a look. And then what would happen? Well, nothing would happen, right?
We're happy with this young core.
Core, building, nothing would really happen. So now, going forward, I get it. Arturis Karnisovas is going to build his team the way that he's probably built the Denver Nuggets. Through the draft, with young players, re-signing and growing with that young core. It's exactly the way that the Nuggets have done it. It's why they got to 54 wins last year. They got to the conference semifinals. I understand it. But now a new era of Bulls basketball has kind of taken hold. And if there are going to be stars who are disgruntled around the league, someone like Donovan Mitchell, I mean, don't you have to kind of now reset your expectations and really look at the way this roster is? Because when you look at this Bulls roster, to me, there are three players that you really should consider of off limits to start. At some point, they may be valuable trade assets, but I would start as a starting point with Coby White, Lowry Markkanen, and Zach LaVine. Those are the three players you could use for the future, right?
Just done with Wendell Carter.
Well, I'm just saying.
No, trash.
He's not trash.
You're done with him.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you had to write down a list and immediately say, these are players I can use for the future that I have to have, I would say those three guys, and then I would build off of that. Clearly, Carter's a good player. He helps you. No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a difference maker? I'm not sold. He's a difference maker. So if you can move him in a situation where you're sending him somewhere to then get back a player, a star-level player, I think that could be important. I think that could also be the argument you could make for Markkanen, too. Even though I have him on my list, you have another year of him under contract. I'm okay with him being on my list for right now, but I could see and understand if the Bulls moved off of Markkanen at some point as well.
So if you look at what happened with Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, we all know that Gobert was very nonchalant, very cavalier about his contraction with the coronavirus. And he was going around and, you know, touching teammates and, like, pretending to cough on things. And that's led to this rift between not just him and Mitchell, but if you go by what Brian Windhorst was reporting, Adrian Wojnarowski was reporting, the entire Jazz organization, all the players, are clearly frustrated with him. Now, they're working, according to this piece that you're mentioning, they're working to mend this relationship between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. Who knows if they're going to be able to? One guy might be on their way out. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be Donovan Mitchell. They might try to ship out Rudy Gobert so the rest of the locker room, you know, stays together. Because if you just get rid of the one guy, you know, it's easier to get rid of Rudy Gobert and make everybody happy than it is to get rid of Donovan Mitchell. But all I care about is what the Bulls are doing right now. And with this new front office that the Bulls have brought in, that the Reinsdorfs have brought in, I just want them to be in the conversation for these guys, right? Like, you just want to be in the room negotiating when these trade opportunities come to fruition. So if you look at Karnisova's history, he doesn't really sign the big free agent, like you mentioned. He builds through the draft, all that kind of thing. Well, if you build through the draft, I, as a Bulls fan, also don't want to be the Denver Nuggets, right? I just don't want to be this try-hard team that makes it, you know, past the first round of the playoffs, and then what? You know, I want to be a contender, and you need stars to be a contender. We all know that Zach LaVine is a very good player. He is not the best player on a team if you're trying to contend for a championship. Now you put him, Donovan Mitchell, Lowry Markkanen, that you may have something there if Markkanen develops. You know, Otto Porter, you may have something there if you can bring in that star to then be the best player on the team, because Zach LaVine's not getting it done. So if Karnisovas can get in the room, not necessarily get in the room, but be a part of these negotiations, that's all I want to see. Be aggressive. That's the kind of general manager I want, or that's the kind of president of basketball operations that I want. I want my guy to be aggressive because, like we've talked about before, it's hard to convince free agents to come here with the way the contracts are structured now. Guys are either staying or doing sign-and-trades, whatever. If you can trade for a disgruntled superstar, that's the kind of guy that you would bring into Chicago.
Well, and the reason I think this caught my attention yesterday in the New York Daily News about the Knicks and people in New York wanting the Knicks to go after Donovan Mitchell is because Mitchell has yet to sign his big contract, right? Like, his extension off of his rookie deal has yet to be signed. Mm-hmm. So he is a player who is in the unique spot where he can force his hand, right? Is it better for the Jazz to move off of Gobert and keep everyone else happy? Probably. The problem is, in the NBA, if you have a disgruntled star, they control everything. So if Donovan Mitchell wants to be the guy that's out, he wants to go somewhere else, he's just done with it, he will control whether or not that happens. And it reminded me of something from a couple years ago. At the 2018 NBA draft, I was on the air with Nick Friedell and Jonathan Hood, and we were at the Advocate Center doing the live show here on ESPN 1000. I was told that night by a league source that the Bulls, the Garpax regime, and their rebuild and everything they were doing. Remember, they got away from the 41-41 team. They traded Jimmy Butler the year before.
Mm-hmm.
That the entire point of all of that was that the Bulls were setting up to make a run at Anthony Davis. The entire point of all that stuff, this is going back to 2018. I was told on that draft night that the reason the Bulls were doing this was because they had their sights set on Anthony Davis, and when Davis was going to force his hand to force a trade out of New Orleans, the Bulls were going to be that young, fun team that had cap space, and they were going to make the move with all their assets. Remember, we heard for a full year and a half about all the assets.
Young core.
The young core and assets. All the assets the Bulls had, and that they were going to make a move for Anthony Davis, right? And then what happened? Time started to play out. The assets weren't worth what they thought they were. And the Bulls actually were never in the realm of making a competitive offer to the New Orleans Pelicans because they didn't actually collect anything. What'd you collect? A bench point guard? A three-point shooting forward who can't actually really give you much?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really have a valuable top three pick or anything. You know, I mean, like, what assets did they actually collect? And the domino that fell there was the Bulls completely whiffed. They weren't ready for when that star player forced his hand, and the Bulls missed out. And what happened? He ended up with the Lakers because the Lakers had the assets. He wanted to go to L.A. He forced his hand. He gets there. Best team in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. If the season ever ends, they're very likely to win an NBA title. Boom. That's the story. Now, regime change here with the Bulls. Are they going to be able to set themselves up for a situation when the next available star, the Donovan Mitchell or the Damian Lillard or whoever it is, wants to force himself out of that location? Will the Bulls be ready for that to pounce?
There are a couple guys that I'd like them to be ready for. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell now. And if you're the Jazz, you look at this situation, you're like, well, we could move off of Gobert, we could do that, and we could probably get another, you know, piece and add a couple pieces because Gobert is a good player. Or we move Donovan Mitchell like you want if he wants to be moved. And you can get back a pretty decent haul, I would imagine, for Donovan Mitchell at this point. The other guy I want them to be ready for is Giannis. You know, the guy about 2 hours to the north.
That's the golden goose, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the one that everyone in the league is kind of circling. Again, remember, in 2018, heading into that draft, the Bulls circled Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis is not only being circled, I assume, by whoever is running things over there now with Karsovis and whoever he's going to hire. But listen, every team in the league, I mean, I have read stories out of the Bay Area that Golden State is setting up contracts and setting things up in the, behind the scenes so they can make a play for Giannis. So, like, everyone in the league is going to make a play.
Absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, but again, just be in the negotiating room. Be a part of the conversation.
Well, when be
the
Bulls, prepared.
Yeah, be ready. Be ready for this kind of stuff. Don't just tell me that, oh, we've got assets, we've got things that we're going to move, and we're going to be able to do this. Actually be ready. And it hopefully, that's what Karnisovas and whoever he brings in his GM is going to do.
Paul in Lakeview, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Paul?
Good morning, gentlemen. I can't get enough of you guys. I love you guys.
Thanks, man.
Recovering
Thanks,
Bears fan. Wow. The Bulls are finally worth paying attention to. I can't believe this. I stopped following them in NBA after Derrick Rose's second knee injury, and this Gar-Pax thing has been such a waste of time. No free agent ever wanted to come to Chicago. Any deal maker in basketball, you know, player that can change things around. LeBron would, you know, him and Bosh, the big three, they were smart to go to Miami. I mean, the Bulls organization was so bad that I was actually happy that Zion Williamson, I think what we had a 7% chance in the lottery to get him.
Yeah.
I was glad that he even went to a team called the Pelicans, you know, although I can't get over that name, the Pelicans. But yeah, I'm just glad I can hear something about Bulls basketball that's positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for the call, Paul. We appreciate you listening. And you know, that's why it caught my attention, because the Knicks are in the same spot as the Bulls right now. The Knicks have a new front office that's going to do things differently. They're going to try and bring back a team from the 90s that people loved, right? Like, the Knicks were a player in the league. I get it. If you're a younger millennial, a Gen Zer, and you look at the Knicks, they've been a laughingstock. So have the Bulls, right? Both teams had their heyday in the 90s. Can we bring that back, right? Like, that's the in vogue thing, bringing things back from the 90s, remaking things from the 90s. The Knicks are in the same spot as the Bulls right now. Now, I think, as far as potential of accomplishing that goal, I like the Bulls' odds to get that done much sooner than the New York Knicks, because I think the Bulls have better players right now. I think they have better players, and I think their ownership group is steady. I feel like what they are doing, what they're implementing now is smart. You never know what the Knicks are going to do. You never know, right? Like, you have no idea what they'll do out there.
I think that and Paul said it best, the Bulls are worth paying attention to. I think that that's what ownership finally saw. They finally saw the apathy. They finally saw the people that don't care. They finally saw the building wasn't as full. People just didn't care about talking Bulls. They were losing part of C Red Nation. And when you lose them, when you lose your most diehard fans because you just continue on the same path, you have to make a change. And hopefully they're involved in all these talks. Hopefully they're involved in all these moves. And hopefully they're involved in free agency. Karnisovas doesn't have that track record, but you know, maybe he comes here and he has a different mindset.
If you want to join the conversation, the phone number is 312-332-3776. I have a name of a team that I think might move up to try and snag Tua Tagovailoa in the NFL draft. And are the Lions in play? We talk about next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
At the top of the NFL draft, it will go Bengals, Redskins, Lions at 3. I think Lions at the third spot, Abdallah, is very interesting. Because I'm not sold. Like, I don't think that they'll pull a move and take a quarterback there at 3. Even though planning for the future is never a bad thing in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you could jump to that third spot, not only could the Lions collect maybe additional first-round picks if they allow someone to jump up, but then, like, that's the spot because we know the Giants are not going to take a quarterback. But then at 5 and 6 with the Dolphins and the Chargers, those two teams need a quarterback. Those two teams, a lot of smoke around those two teams either moving, positioning, trying to land one of these quarterbacks at the top of the draft board. So the team that I'm watching that I think that could be in play, I'm looking at the Las Vegas Raiders. They have the 19th pick and the 12th pick. If that is a team that wants to find their quarterback for the future, that's the team that I think could be in play to move up into the top 5 to that third spot where the Lions sit. And if you're the Lions, I would do that deal in a second.
I disagree.
If the Raiders said to the Lions, "We will give you 12 and 19 for the third pick," you wouldn't do that?
I would do it, but I don't think the Raiders are going to do it. I think that that third pick is going to come down to the Dolphins or the Chargers. Like, if the Lions want to pull something shady, they call the Dolphins and they go, "Hey, the Chargers are moving up. Like, the Chargers offered us their pick and a couple other picks. What do you got?" Because they're going to take Tua. And then the Dolphins either go, "Well, let them have it, and we'll take Justin Herbert," or we counteroffer with this. Because I think the Raiders are more likely, because of their quarterback situation with
Derek Carr?
Derek Carr, yeah, I said Carr. With Carr.
I don't think you said anything.
I said Carr. I was trying to think of his first name real quick. With Derek Carr.
I think you did like a snappy thing behind
the
scenes.
Yeah. All right. Behind this, I was doing side snaps.
Well, I saw some hands going.
Well, it's Las Vegas.
Like, I'm not looking at you. In the studio, I'm looking away from you at my computer.
We're sitting. We're not sitting across from each other.
Yeah. Tyler's on the other side of the glass, watching us do the show right now. So we are presenting to him.
Yep.
Yeah. We're doing it like as if we were sitting in a
Well, in radio, they tell you want to talk to a single person. Like, you're talking to one person.
Tyler.
Like one person. Yeah, Tyler.
That's what they taught us.
Yeah, and your mom and dad. And the dogs. But if I'm the Raiders, I sit back and I wait, because if I get Jordan Love, all right, then I get Jordan Love. You know, if Love goes ahead of Herbert, there's talk this week that 5 or 6 teams have called about Herbert. They're calling or about Jordan Love and trying to get more information on him, as you can't do extra workouts and extra interviews and all that kind of stuff. So they're trying to get intel on Jordan Love. So if I'm the Raiders, I just sit back and wait because I still have Derek Carr for this year. If they're bad again or if they don't improve, they're going to have a middle-round pick like they did again this year. They can also go for a quarterback next year. I think that they're in a good situation where they can sit back and wait for Herbert or Love if they wanted to. Or if they really like their quarterback situation, they let someone else trade up for their pick and then they move back. You know, there's talk of the Patriots maybe moving for a quarterback too because of what they like. Because they only have Stidham right now and a couple other backups. I think Brian Hoyer signed with them too again. So you've got teams that still, they don't necessarily need a quarterback like right away, but they could make a move. But this, to me, is a battle between the Chargers and the Dolphins and what the Lions can get and what kind of haul they can get from each team. Now, they could do what the 49ers did to the Bears and call the Dolphins and be like, hey, just so you know, the Chargers are calling, even though they're not.
Well, you know that's going to happen. Like, and the Bengals are in a spot, too, where because Chase Young is hands down the best player on the board, you know, I feel like the Bengals should try and play the Redskins as well. You know, I get it. Like, we all assume that Joe Burrow is going one to the Bengals, but the Bengals have the hand here. And if you really want the most impactful, the best player in the draft, that player agreed upon by all draft experts is Chase Young. So wouldn't you try and make the Redskins sweat there at two?
Like, he's easily the most can't-miss player
right,
in the draft.
And if you could somehow convince them to jump above you and you get something back for it and they could take Chase Young one, and then you could take Burrow at two, but also collect an asset or something. I think that's the way the Bengals should play this as well.
I don't know. If I'm the Redskins and you're the Bengals,
take your pick.
No, you call me and you're like, hey, we're gonna take Chase Young. I go, okay, do it. You're not gonna do it. Yeah, you're not gonna do it. And if I'm like, I don't understand.
But he's hands down the best player in the draft.
He is. But if I'm the Redskins and Joe Burrow falls to two for some reason, I'm taking Joe Burrow.
On Friday, we got a chance to talk with the Draft Network's Benjamin Solak, and we asked him about Tua Tagovailoa here at the top of the draft board. And after his pro day and what we saw on film, should teams still be hesitant to draft Tua Tagovailoa?
Yeah, it's tricky, you know, because we're not only dealing with a hip fracture here, we're dealing with multiple years' worth of a history of high ankle sprains. And Tua is a quarterback that is capable of and likes to escape the pocket. And the more he's had these ankle injuries, the more we've seen limits on his escapability, which changes his play style and thereby kind of changes his projection. People talked about him as Russell Wilson in the beginning of his career, and now they're talking about him as Drew Brees. Well, Drew Brees ain't move around as much as Russell Wilson does. So we got a different paradigm for evaluating Tua. From an accuracy perspective, a mechanics perspective, a leadership and poise perspective, Tua is everything you want of a starting NFL quarterback. He's a high caliber pick. Could have gone number one overall in this draft if he was completely healthy and if, you know, Burrow didn't go super Saiyan this season. With that said, he's still worthy of that top five pick. You should expect him to be a starting caliber quarterback from year one. There's just a lot more uncertainty built into that pick than there was going to be given what you expected coming into the season. So the team that takes him will still take him top five and they'll take him to start in year one. And maybe it's Miami, maybe it's the Chargers, whoever it is. They'll take him and they'll expect him to be their starting quarterback long term, but there's a lot more risk. And sometimes you have to make risky picks at the top of the NFL draft to get paid. It's as simple as that.
That's Benjamin Solak from the Draft Network on with us on Friday night. Nicole Auerbach was on with us last week, and we talked about Tua Tagovailoa's play. If you remove the injury concerns, what did you see on tape from Tua?
It's very interesting because you know, I heard what you guys were saying earlier about what would have happened maybe in the Heisman race and some of the other kind of national conversations if Tua had stayed healthy. And I think that's pretty valid because, you know, he was, in the last 2 years, his numbers and his efficiency and all of those things were right up there in all-time historic highs, right? Like NCAA records. Him and Kyler were I believe both broke Baker Mayfield's record as passing efficiency at quarterback in a season. And, you know, he was doing all these special things, and you could argue that he was one of the most important players to come through the SEC in quite some time because of the way that he changed Alabama's offense. And by doing that and not just having, you know, a pro-style quarterback and guys that will just run the ball down your throat, he made them, you know, in 2018, you know, I would call them, like, it was kind of like a cheat code in a video game, right? Because they already had more five-star players than everyone else. They already had elite defensive players. And then you add someone like Tua who can throw like that. They never really had that vertical threat, that vertical passing game. And what it did was it made everyone in the SEC change, and that's the reason that you see LSU do what they do in 2019. So, you know, he is, you know, kind of one of those all-time SEC greats, despite the fact that, you know, he, you know, didn't win a Heisman, even though, you know, he was arguably, you know, one of the two best quarterbacks both years. And you know, obviously had the season cut short. So it's such an interesting college career, but I think there's a ton of, you know, a ton of respect for what he did on the field physically, his arm. I think his decision-making improved. He obviously has the skills, you know, to scramble with his legs. And you know, I think that he's going to be one of those people. I don't know how people are going to be doing these interviews. I'm guessing it's a lot of Zoom and phone calls. But, you know, he's always been like a really high character guy. And, you know, Nick Saban always raved about him as like one of the best people to come through Tuscaloosa in his time there. So, you know, I think he's going to blow people away. It's really just going to be that medical concern. But, you know, I mean, he should still be a first-round pick. I guess the question is just where in that first round.
So that's Nicole Auerbach with us last week from The Athletic talking about the draft possibilities for Tua Tagovailoa and what she saw from him in college football last season. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000. You can also download the full interview at the Black and Abdallah section on the ESPN Chicago app. Just download, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. So, Abdallah, when we look at Tua and the concerns going forward, you know, we just heard from Benjamin Solak. We heard from Nicole Auerbach, kind of putting to perspective the play on the field. When we look at the top five, top 10 in the draft, there's going to be a lot of movement, trying to kind of position, a lot of smoke going up to find out whether or not Tua is worthy of one of these picks in the top 10.
I think he is. I mean, we've talked about it before. I think that, you know, the freak hip injury and what we've seen from the pro day, like, all you have to worry about is if your doctors have cleared him, which most doctors have, and surgeons have said he's ready to play, all these guys have looked at him, said he's ready to play. I don't see why. I understand why you take Joe Burrow number one because of the health concern and the numbers that Joe Burrow put up. But if I'm the Dolphins, I've been making the case that the Redskins should consider. I know they love Chase Young, but I've been making the case that the Redskins might even be worth taking him.
We talk more about this with Chris Trapazzo from CBS Sports next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I have to ask Abdallah about his old-timey father who just got emailed this week. We'll get to that in just a second. Coming out hot at your dad. Happy Easter, Abdallah. Take okay. That.
We will get to that in a second.
Each week at this time, we have our favorite segment of the week. It's called Good Question. This is how it works. Throughout the year, we listen to everything here at ESPN 1000. When a host at ESPN 1000 asks a question to a guest on the phone and the guest responds with good or great question, you get a point. So we have a scoring system. Abdallah has the leaderboard in 2020. Who is in the lead for a good question?
1G Thomas Waddle is in the lead with 17. And tied for second place are Cap and Sylvie.
All right, here's this week's edition of Good Question.
Dad, I got a question for you. Can I get an answer?
It's a final question, bro.
You're going to take any question?
You want me to let me finish talking? You ask me a question, I'm going to answer it. Don't interrupt me, okay? Just leave it plain and simple, all right?
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
On a rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
Dad, I got a question for you. Can I get it?
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
question that drives us near. It's the question that brought you here.
How could you ask me a question like that? What is my opinion of his performance?
I'm Ron Burgundy?
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
Dad, I got a question for you. Can I get an answer?
This week's edition of Good Question. Here it is.
If Adam Simon is a guy who, you know, people hold in high esteem, I spoke to someone today who you would know in the league, and I said, tell me about Adam Simon, because I'm hearing a lot about his name. He said, sharp, 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 sharp. He came in as a video coordinator intern, and in 25 seasons has now become a vice president there. He is a guy that people really like. If Adam Simon is the guy, what do you think that means for a guy like Jim Boylan?
That's a great question.
If none of this were going on and today were the start of Masters Week, would Tiger Woods have been able to play and defend his title?
Great question.
The people that rise throughout the pre-draft process, and we see it over the course of the whole offseason. So I'll go the other route. Who are the couple of guys for you that have been the most consistently at the top during your time period here? We know Joe Burrow has been consistently at number one for everybody, but of the handful of guys from a couple different positions, who's held the steadiest throughout this process?
Good question.
Put it on the poll. Has Stugatz, and I'm asking you this as a question as we put it up, Stugatz, have you ever actually stayed for an entire sporting event?
Wow, that's a good question. Yeah.
Your offensive line this past year, now, I was a high school and college wrestler as well, and I know the whole starting five, I believe, including the Paulson brothers, were either state champs or nobody was lower than third, I believe, on
the good
starting
question
group.
Army was
so,
up early
first
this week.
And foremost,
shout
of
out.
That starting five, who was the best wrestler?
Well, the best wrestler. That's a great question.
When you guys do get the green light, how
go.
Long will it take to get ready?
Yeah, so that's a good question.
You're going to be hanging out with Pesci at the Oscars. You're going to be with in this movie. Or you're going to be in front of 20,000 people in your hometown selling out the United Center. Which would have been more surreal to you at that moment?
Oh, wow, that's a good question.
Mike, lastly, and I appreciate your time. Could you just tell me the quarterback that's going to be in this upcoming draft that you're curious about that's going to play on the next level here next year?
That's a great question.
Is Wes Unseld Jr. ready to be a coach?
Yurko.
That's a good question.
Anyway, can I get a play on which quarterback? Like, is there a futures, a prop bet on which quarterback will start the opening game of the season for the Bears?
That's a great question.
Matt, tell me, who is the best player that you saw in college football last year?
Oh, that's a great question.
When are you most necessary to Tiger? When the wheels are coming off? Or, you know, just kind of refocusing him? Do you know when to say what you need to say to him?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, what are caddies doing?
And
how devastating could this kind of layoff be for just a lot of the caddies, like some of the golfers out there that maybe we don't know as much, the guys that have to grind it out, the guys that are playing week to week to make a living? What is this like for some of those caddies, and will it force them to look to do other things even when golf comes back, Joe?
No, good question again. Like you said, you know, everyone wants to talk about Tiger and Rory and everything else, and their caddies are just fine. It's a good question.
Wow, the rare doubler. How about that? The doubler.
It's only one question, though.
All right, so Waddle's still in the lead?
Waddle's still in the lead with 18, yes.
All right, that's pretty good. Good week of good questions.
A lot of good points this week. I was sent some good points. We don't care about good points.
I don't care if it's
a good
point.
Chris just got a good point.
You know why, Tyler? Because a good point is not a good question.
It's not a good question.
Now, we originally changed the rules at the very start to include great questions because it's basically good and great questions are the same thing. But interesting questions don't count.
A lot of baseball news this week. So Jesse was on like three, four times.
Gotcha. He was handing out good points.
Not a single. You know why? Because he texted me and asked me, what's wrong with saying good question? He goes, what's wrong with saying good question? And I go, nothing. You just do it a lot. Because it allows me to think. I go, that's the point.
Yes, right. Exactly.
That's
it.
The bit.
It's the crutch. That's the crutch. How about that? We'll talk about Abdallah and his father getting email this week. Next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.